91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Perhaps it's time for a commitment to a knee-centric lifestyle. Save on pain and perhaps avoid a knee replacement. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We begin the hour with specialist Dr. Gregory Martin, who's written a book on the complicated and degenerative knee joint. 34% of those over 54 have chronic knee pain. Millions have had replacement. That's first. Then Linda Gastenheimer with the founder of the Wynwood Yard, a new outdoor food hub in Miami. Besides offering food and music, she runs her own test kitchen for plant-based foods and gives culinary classes for kids and adults. So, lots to hear today. Stay tuned. First, this news. And it is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Thursday edition of the program. Well, knees and hips are eventually problematic for many people, especially as we age. Of course, it pays to take good care of them. So next is advice from Dr. Gregory Martin.
He's an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in hip and knee disorders. He's written a book called Education for Knees. It's the number for knees. Everything you need to know for happy, healthy, and pain-free knees.
Dr. Gregory Martin now joins us from Boca Raton. Welcome to you, doctor.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Good to have you. Doctor, I've had about, that I can think of, six friends undergo knee replacement surgery in the last couple of years. Several others received arthroscopic knee surgery. Am I imagining it?
She's only in her 30s.
My friends are, some of them. Is this a recent epidemic, or has this always been the case?
Well, I definitely think it's getting more and more common. It's definitely, I think, an epidemic proportion now. It's a variety of reasons. You know, the baby boomers are all turning 65 now, so there's an aging phenomenon. But also people are a lot more active and they want to continue their activity into their older years. And also Americans are a lot more heavier and overweight than they've ever been. So that's putting additional stress on their knees. So there's a lot of factors leading to this.
Well, the most frequent sports knee injury seems to be knees. Is that the case? I mean, it's from pro football to even handball.
You're right. I mean, it's extremely common. I mean, it's happening in younger people. It's happening in older people. We just ask a lot of our knees. It's the largest and most complex joint in our body, and it sees four times the weight of our body. And so, as we do these physical activities, the stresses and the weight loads that are going through this joint are immense.
Well, to Joe's question, you know, it seems pretty ironic. We're told our entire lives how important it is to exercise, but almost everyone I am speaking of here was an athlete who, it wasn't their age related. They excelled at their sport. They damaged their knees in the process. So what is the answer? Don't run, don't cheerlead, don't be a gymnast, don't surf, don't play tennis?
No, the answer lies somewhere in between, you know, so... What, believe it or not, one of the worst things you could do for your knees is not exercise. So I would never want to discourage people from doing things that they love to do, particularly when it's good for their overall physical and mental health. But on the other hand, you know, you have to realize, you know, at each stage of our life that, you know, we have to adapt. And if you hurt yourself, it doesn't mean you should give up everything. It just means sometimes you need to tailor back or find different activities that your body tolerates more. But the worst thing to do is nothing, because when you do nothing, what happens is you fall into what I call the terrible cycle, where you hurt your knee, so you stop exercising, you start to gain weight, you start to feel not good about yourself, you get depressed, and then the pain worsens, and you're in this terrible cycle. So I just want people to continue to stay active, regardless of what happens, keep their muscles strong, keep their joints moving.
When we watch football, we always hear these players with the dreaded anterior cruciate injury. What's that about?
Yeah, so there's these big ropes that hold our bones together called ligaments. And the ACL, or the anterior cruciate, is one of the more commonly injured ones. It's responsible for keeping our knee stable. So with a certain type of injury, you know, usually when you're, particularly when you're younger, it takes a pretty severe injury, like a football injury or something of that nature, where the actual ligament pops. And you actually can feel it. You know, usually the person ruptures their ACL, they hear or feel a pop, and then the knee swells. It's not a minor thing. But after that, you know, really the knee's never the same. So some people opt to have it reconstructed, or some people rehab the muscles around, but it looks makes
like,
the knee
look. It looks like agony.
Yeah, it's not something you want to happen.
Why is knee replacement surgery so much more complicated, both the surgery and the recovery, than hip surgery? I would think hips would be pretty tricky.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, I generally tell people, you know, the hips are easy and the knees are a lot harder. You know, the hips, you know, you just put them in, and generally it's not very physical therapy or patient dependent, the outcome. Usually they generally do pretty well. The knees take a lot more work on the recovery side. They're a lot more physical therapy dependent to get them to work properly, to avoid scar tissue formation, to get them to bend and straighten properly. So, you know, we don't really know why, but they definitely are more challenging.
Well, you advocate that a lot. I mean, are surgeries being done? Are you saying that a lot of the people that are getting surgery shouldn't be getting it or don't need it? And it's the doc, I mean, the patient, you're saying we should educate ourselves, but how do we know if we need it or don't need it unless we go to a doctor? And if the doctor says we need it, we listen.
Well, that's part of the reason why I wrote my book. You know, I really wanted to share my, you know, my philosophy, and which, you know, resonates with people, which is, you know, you don't take surgery lightly. Surgery should be a last resort. And what I tell people is there's a lot of things you can do to help yourself that can help even more than your doctor or surgeon can do. You know, and I can expand on those. But the take-home point is, yeah, not everybody needs surgery. I do think there are a lot of surgeries that people jump into, and it's not the right thing for folks. So I want people to educate themselves, learn appropriate things to do, and then try those things. And if they do all those things right and they still don't feel better and they need surgery, they've optimized their chance for a good outcome with surgery.
Well, let's expand on some of them. What are these things that we can do? You talk about foods we can eat, exercises we can do. Let's go over some of them.
And depression.
Yeah, so I really break it down into four aspects, which is number one, education, number two, nutrition, number three, fitness, and number four, support. So I'll just touch briefly on each one. Education is the first step. That's learning, you know, what the parts of your knee are in very simple terms, so you can understand what can go wrong and then how to go about fixing it. The nutrition aspects, it's learning appropriate diet management, weight management, which is so important, learning foods that can aggravate inflammation and cause things to get worse, or foods that can be helpful, as well as the importance of water, and learning nutritional supplements and which ones are actually potentially effective versus which ones really not are not based in any science. Fitness is so, so important. We touched on this earlier, but if you keep your joint moving so it doesn't get stiff, and if you keep the muscles strong around the joint, that goes a long way to making the joint feel better, despite what's going on within the joint. And then the last thing is the support aspect, and that's learning some safe and effective ways to manage discomfort so you can continue to lead an active lifestyle.
Well, you say that that perhaps the use of pain meds is excessive. There are ways to limit their use. Are you saying that there are nutritional ways or ways of exercise?
Yeah, so what I see all the time is people are taking all these over-the-counter drugs and prescription drugs, and, you know, they think that just because they get them from a doctor or even from the pharmacy where they can buy them over the counter, that they're safe. And now we're learning more and more that they're not. You know, the Tylenol or acetaminophen, if you take too much of it, it can affect your liver, even cause liver failure. So they've been progressively lowering the dose that's safe over the years. And more they're finding it's not really effective for knee pain or back pain or a lot of these other things. the anti-inflammatory drugs we know can cause bleeding, they can cause ulcers, and now the FDA strengthened their warnings last year on the risk of heart attack and stroke within the first few weeks of taking them. And then the narcotics, we now know, are really no more effective than any of these other drugs, and they cause addiction. So there's a real trend away from that. So what's there left to do? What can you do? And, you know, that's why I really focus on the lifestyle aspects. It's getting extra weight off. So if you're carrying around 20 extra pounds and you lose that weight, that takes 80 pounds of pressure off your knees, because the knee sees four times the weight of your body. Nutritional things, yeah. So I researched all the different types of supplements, and what I found was there's two that really had a lot of clinical evidence that shows that it's beneficial, or at least worth a try for people to take. And those were glucosamine sulfate and turmeric or curcumin, which is the active ingredient, which has worked in some studies just as well as anti-inflammatory drugs without the risk. And then I also talk about topical treatments. You know, I actually worked recently to help design a topical pain relief cream called Relief 4. And it's a menthol-based product. It's got vitamin E and aloe and some other natural-type ingredients in it. But I really think there's a lot of benefit to learning to manage discomfort with topical treatments rather than oral treatments, because then you're not getting the systemic effect and all the risk and the downside.
So there's actual factual studies on this glucosamine and turmeric that it does have visible aid to knee problems?
Sure. There's been tons of clinical studies. And like anything else, they're somewhat controversial. You'll get some studies that show that it doesn't help and some that shows that it does. But when I did the research and I even looked on the National Institute of Health website, they concluded that glucosamine sulfate is likely effective for treatment of osteoarthritis of the knee and knee pain. And there's been several head-to-head studies of turmeric versus ibuprofen and celecoxib and diclofenac, which are all anti-inflammatory drugs. And all the studies have concluded that they work just as well as taking those I think, riskier prescription medications. Mm.
Do those come in pill form now, a capsule? Can you get turmeric?
Generally the active ingredient there is called curcumin, and it's pretty widely available now at most health food stores. But some people, like the Indian culture has for years, just integrate it as part of their diet.
Right.
They incorporate the powders or the root and incorporate it into their cooking. But it's certainly available as a supplement as well.
We're speaking with Dr. Gregory Martin. He's a Harvard Fellowship-trained knee surgeon. He's written Education for Knees, Everything You Need to Know for Happy, Healthy, and Pain-Free Knees. We'll be right back.
And we're back with today's Topical Currents, St. Patrick's Day edition, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. And we're visiting with Dr. Gregory Martin. We're talking about his book, Education for Knees. That's the number four knees. Everything you need to know for happy, healthy, and pain-free knees. Dr. Martin, how about some specific knee exercises that are helpful, or are there any?
Well, yeah, so I worked with a therapist to come up with a program that can be done in 10 to 15 minutes a day in the comfort of your own home. And all it takes is a simple chair, no special equipment, and almost anyone can do it. And it really is helpful, and that's in the book. But as for some general types of things, what I always tell people for the knees, one of the best exercises is bicycling. And that's either getting on a bike and going out in the community if you feel safe, or using a stationary bike, or a recumbent bike where the pedals are out in front. You know, that's one of the things that's the best tolerated with people with knee problems. You know, so people always tell me, hey, doc, I can't exercise because my knee hurts too much. And that's actually the wrong thing to say. I mean, I'm not saying you should ignore pain and not get it checked out. But for almost all conditions with the knee I could think of, almost all of them can benefit from doing some exercise.
What about...
cycling because... Okay.
I just wanted to ask you about elliptical.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the elliptical, too.
Okay.
It's a low-impact activity, and, you know, it's good. Anything that promotes motion of the joints while at the same time building muscles really helps. And the other thing I wouldn't underestimate, too, is the psychological benefits of exercise. We know now that there's this very real link between knee pain and depression. And what the studies show is that 30 minutes of regular activity or exercise a day is the absolute equivalent of taking an antidepressant pill. So I always tell people, if you want a free, simple, easy-to-take drug that's extremely effective, it's there and it's available. It's called exercise for 30 minutes a day.
So what are some of the foods that cause inflammation and some of the foods that don't?
Yeah, so unfortunately, the American diet is filled with all these processed foods. You know, so what I tell my patients is you really want to get back to our roots and follow like a whole foods type of diet. I'm a big fan of the Mediterranean diet. It's heavily based in vegetables and fruits and healthy fats. You know, I tell my patients anything that says low fat or low carb or low this or low that, those are all just buzzwords. And there's some kind of processing that goes on to make it that way. So I tell people if they stick with whole foods, fruits, vegetables, small portions of proteins and whole grain carbs, you know, you're going to feel better. You're going to lose weight, and you're going to have less inflammation in your body and less pain.
You know, I have to ask you, if you think there are too many surgeries being done, that is two-sided. It's not just the patient who really is perhaps not educated, but why are the doctors doing them if they don't need them?
Yeah, you know, it takes years to change practices, you know, so when we look at meniscal tears and arthroscopy, we know now after years of studying it that in most cases with degenerative knees, degenerative meniscal tears, arthroscopy is not a helpful procedure. But a lot of surgeons and doctors were trained for years and it was ingrained in their mind that that was an appropriate treatment. So they still do it in certain cases, but it takes a long time to change doctors' practices. And, I think, you know, it's not all black and white. There are gray areas where certain cases surgery is still helpful.
Right.
How about steroids and other injections?
Yeah. So, you know, I do think, you know, in a degenerative knee, it's sometimes worthwhile to try a corticosteroid. You don't want to give too much of it because I think it actually can further degenerate the knee, and I certainly don't like to inject healthy knees with corticosteroid, or very rarely. There are some other materials we inject too called hyaluronic acid, and there's different brands of this, and that's also controversial. Some of the studies shows it works, some of the studies shows that it doesn't. But I do think that these are important stepping stones along the way to considering surgery. And then how do you know when you're ready for surgery is, you know, really when nothing's worked, your quality of life is unacceptable, and the pain is really limiting your function and mobility. And that's when you want to make, I always tell people you never want to rush to surgery, but you never want to wait so long and be so scared of it that you don't get it if you actually need it too.
And how do you find a good surgeon? What do you suggest people do to find a doctor that they can trust?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of things you should do. I mean, you start with the basics, look for someone who's board certified in orthopedic surgery. And ideally, you'd want to find a knee specialist. You can go to the American Association of Hip and Knee Surgeons, and you can find knee specialists, American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. And they all have websites with patient finders. But then on top of that, do your local research. I recommend talking to nurses at the hospital that may work with the doctors. I recommend talking to physical therapists that actually see the results and talk to patients who've actually had the results. You know, because if you just listen to your primary care doctor or something, you just never know whether it's their golf buddy or something else. So, you know, do due diligence and find someone who really knows what they're doing and gets their patients out them.
You hear a lot of advertising for sports medicine clinics. Is that the way to turn if you have bad knees?
Well, I mean, you know, it's very generic. You know, I mean, again, who's seeing you? I wouldn't just go to some clinic. I mean, who's the person that you're going to form a bond and a partnership with?
Well, many of these companies advertise that they do that for pro sports teams and college teams and that. Does that mean that they're really qualified for everybody's knee?
Yeah, you have to be very careful because a lot of those arrangements are financial and not necessarily based on the highest quality.
So how come, like, your knees are so-so and you have trouble with them, but they don't really need any treatment, and then all of a sudden, I don't know, is it the rain, is the humidity, it causes your knee to hurt that day? You often hear people complain about, you know, certain days. What causes those bad knee days?
Yeah, that is a very challenging question. You know, it's one of the enigmas. I mean, I see people all the time with very minimal symptoms, and they can have severely arthritic knees. And then I see other people with kind of minimally arthritic knees that have terrible, terrible symptoms. So the truth of the matter is there is so much about all this that we don't understand. There's just a big variance in how people feel pain and how people perceive pain,
right,
and how these things affect them. But what I do see is a common trend. People who maintain an appropriate body weight and people who stay in good shape can live with a lot more arthritic problems much better than people who let themselves go into kind of disrepair.
So should pain be our guide? It can, because pain, as you say, it's so subjective. Some people have a greater pain tolerance than others. So if you use pain as your guide or your measure for whether you should get treatment, that can be the wrong thing too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I think pain should never be ignored, you know, because there are some serious conditions like tumors and infections and things like that, you know, really need to be diagnosed so they can be handled appropriately. But assuming that people are experiencing knee pain from the most common cause, which is degenerative joint disease, then that's where the decision making comes in, and that's where I say, you know, use surgery as a last resort. Focus on the lifestyle aspects, on the things that we spoke about, the exercises and the nutritional aspects, and learning the support measures, and then really only do surgery when you need it.
What makes for a successful surgery or an easy recovery? Because I've seen people have, you know, very steady, easy recoveries, and I've seen people struggle that for months they're still getting water on the knee after surgery and struggling and having to do physical therapy 3 times a week. And what determines that?
Right. So there is definitely a variability in how people recover and how they respond to surgery. But again, what I tell people is that all the things that I talk about, all these same things that can help your knee pain, they might help you avoid surgery or at least delay the need. But those same things, if you have surgery, they dramatically improve your chances of having a good outcome. So if you go into surgery and your muscles are strong, your joints flexible, you're not overweight, you're eating right, you're much less likely to have a complication or a bad outcome and a much easier recovery. So I really try and emphasize that, and that's, again, part of the reason why I wrote the book.
Well, the name of the book is Education, the Number 4 Knees, Everything You Need to Know for Happy, Healthy, and Pain-Free Knees. And the author is Dr. Gregory Martin. He's a board-certified Harvard Fellowship-trained knee surgeon, instructor, and author. He's also a researcher and designer of knee replacement techniques. And you're in private practice in Palm Beach County, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being with us. Do you have a website?
I do. My book has a website, which is education4knees.com. And my personal website is floridajointreplacement.com.
Okay, Dr. Martin, thanks so much for being with us. And welcome back to Thursday's Topical Currents, Bonnie Berman and Joseph Cooper.
Maybe we weren't designed to walk on concrete all the time. I wonder if other primates have knee problems.
Well, they have four legs.
Right. All their pressure is on the two.
Right.
We bipeds. Anyway.
Anyway, away from knees, it's Food and Dining Thursday. Linda Gassenheimer's with us. It's also St. Patrick's Day, of course, when we often feature Irish cuisine and spirits on the program.
Especially spirits.
Yes. But today, Linda's focus is on a highly local community food asset that we're all eager to hear about. It's just up the road from our studios. Welcome, Linda.
Well, great to be with you, Bonnie and Joe. It's called the Windward Yard. It's a culinary incubator. It's a launch pad. It's an event space. You know, I was really curious to see what it was all about. So I asked our guest to fill us in. And she's Della Hyman. She's the founder and the CEO of, she tells me it's the Windward Yard. And she's the inspiration behind this new food and culture spot. So let's welcome Della Hyman.
Thank you so much, Linda. It's wonderful to be here.
Great to have you, because she's brought lots of food for us. And of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Have you been to Windward Yard? Do you have any questions, or maybe you have some comments about it, or maybe a suggestion for Della? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And email is radio@WLRN.org.
And our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker, he's not with us today.
That's why we don't have spirits.
Well, we will. We will. Just a minute. He's about to become a grandfather any minute, and we're all waiting for the good news from him. Okay.
Congratulations.
Yes, but he did send me his St. Patty's Day drink suggestions, and we'll hear about them later. Okay. Della Hyman, you have an MBA from Harvard. Very impressive. So what brought you to Miami and into the food world?
So I'm very passionate about food accessibility, and for a long time I had been working to create a model where you could apply the economics of traditional fast food to healthy food and to help make healthy food more affordable and accessible to a greater percentage of the population. And most importantly, just to make people, to help people understand that healthy food can be really delicious. So
you came down to Miami.
Yeah, so I was looking.
From Boston.
I
can understand why, don't you think?
I think weather? There are a lot of reasons to move to Miami. I was looking for test markets for the concept, and I just fell in love with this city. I fell in love with the energy here, the people. The entrepreneurial ecosystem is very compelling. It's a great time to be here.
So now you've got Windward Yard. First, tell us, where is it?
So Windward Yard is on 29th Street between First Avenue and Miami. It's right across the street from the Rubel Family Collection and next door to O Cinema.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So what happens there? I mean, I was really curious. I had to go there to see what it was all about.
I want to know what a culinary incubator is.
So culinary incubators exist in different forms and fashions around the world. But when I moved here, one of the things that I noticed was that the barriers to entry for new food concepts are very high. It is very expensive to start a brick and mortar concept in Miami right now. And so I got very interested in this idea of creating a more iterative way to launch a business with lower capital barriers. And so the culinary incubation space that we created at the Windward Yard is focused on food trucks mostly, all pop-up temporary portable structures. So the idea is that concepts come in on a rotating basis. And
so how many food trucks do you have there at one time?
So we have four at one time. And then sometimes we test out other concepts in a more pop-up format. So we're doing a really wonderful entrepreneur is coming down this next weekend from New York to do an ice cream sandwich pop-up. So that's a little more
So when you
temporary.
Say pop-up, what happens? Do they bring a truck?
So the food trucks that we have, yeah, they're all in food truck format. And basically an entrepreneur will come to launch an idea. Some of the entrepreneurs we work with are building out a food truck from scratch, and some of them are already working in Miami, but they want a more permanent place to launch the venture and test out ideas. So they'll bring in a food truck, and right now we have four concepts. One of them is my test kitchen, which you've already mentioned, and I think we'll talk about a little bit more. The second one is Mayumi, which is the only omakase sushi truck in the country.
Okay, so, you're going to have to explain omakase to us.
So it's Chef's Choice. 6 to 8 courses, and they only have 6 seats. So you have to make a reservation, and they're pretty much sold out every night.
A food truck with reservation.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And omakase means...
Chef's choice.
Yeah. Okay.
And
all
so
right.
they...
So you just go there and whatever he's serving, that's what you get.
Exactly. So you make a reservation and then the chef will come and he'll course out the meal for you. And it was inspired by... the chef that created it is in New York, and the co-founder, Jake Smith, moved the truck to Miami. And the chef here, Rio, is phenomenal. It's some of the best food that you can get.
Now, are these food trucks subject to the same regulations as brick and mortar restaurants?
No, so they get licensing from DBPR as a food truck, so it's a mobile food
DBPR.
Serving. Department of it's professional regulation food and beverage businesses, and so it's basically. From their perspective, it's a mobile food serving unit. And in Miami, it's pretty complicated, actually, because you can't operate a food truck on public property in this city. And so food trucks can only operate on private property. And so the city actually helped us develop a mechanism for being able to operate here like a restaurant, but we're food trucks. So they're mobile in nature, but we're hooked into electricity and plumbing. And I put in all the infrastructure to do that. And then the city was incredibly helpful in helping us figure out how to do this on an ongoing basis.
So now you had...
Yeah.
So that's 2 food trucks. So what are the other 2 that are there?
So we've had several... several tenants that came in, resident entrepreneurs that came in, did a 3-month cohort, and they left. And so the 2 new ones that are coming in now, one of them is a new concept by Richard Hales of Sakaya Kitchen and Black Brick. It's can't announce what it is yet, but that will be coming soon.
So it's a secret coming soon.
It's a secret coming soon, and it's
very exciting.
It's going
to be Asian flavors.
Asian flavors may or may not be part of it. I will let Richard tell you when the time comes, but it's going to be phenomenal, just like everything that he does.
All right. We'll find out. Huh?
Uh-huh. It's going to be very exciting. And then the last one, something that I'm really excited about, it's a new wood-fired pizza concept. And Franco and Ashley Stancione, who created Stancione 87, which is a Neapolitan wood-fired pizza concept in Brickell, are launching a new concept. It's very...
So when you say new wood-fired pizza, we've had wood-fired pizza. What's new about it?
So it's very young, hip, creative. They're adding in a lot of ingredients that you wouldn't necessarily see with pizza, and they're just letting their creativity...
Such as?
They haven't announced the menu yet, so I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say
on
the radio.
I think it's another secret.
Brussels sprouts, which are going to be involved, which is great.
Okay, so St. Paddy's Day, it's green. That's all right.
Yeah, but they're just a very high energy, creative group of entrepreneurs, and they have a lot of great ideas. And so we're just so excited to see what they're going to do there. But they're actually building out an Airstream, and so the concept is going to be a wood fired.
They're building out
an airstream. Yeah,
that's what, to start the fire.
So an Airstream unit, like those old,
the big camper,
retro,
mobile home thing.
Exactly, it's going to be super cool. So they're building it in an Airstream that's going to house the mini restaurant.
How is that oven in that vehicle?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer.
You know, along with what Joe asked, are food trucks regulated in terms of, are they inspected?
Yes.
Like restaurants are inspected for cleanliness and for, safety violations and all that stuff.
100%. Yeah. We have all kinds of fun with inspectors at the Wynwood Yard all the time. But they're definitely present. And
I want everyone to know she's smiling big time when she said we're having all kinds of fun with inspectors.
Well, that's a good thing. Yes. That's a good thing.
They're actually, they've been very helpful. I'm really grateful to everyone at the city that's been so helpful to us, because it really would have been impossible to do this without them. And they've bought into the project and they're very much a part of everything that we're doing. So let's
talk about this, because we have bowls here. We've got lots of bowls, and bowls, I'm talking B-O-W-L, seem to be such an in thing, and you've brought all this wonderful food. So I saw Joe eating this before. What is it?
I was wondering about B-O-W-L-S.
Is there any other bowl?
Well, cotton bowl. Cotton bowl weevil or something. Anyway, Linda, I'm sorry.
go ahead.
Apology accepted, okay. Joe Cooper.
Well, then I am too.
Yeah, right. So tell us what are we eating here? They're fabulous.
Okay, so the concept, which is called Della's Test Kitchen, is a globally inspired build-your-own bowl concept. And so what you're eating today here are four house favorites. So the first one is the Mediterranean bowl. It has brown rice, chickpeas, sweet potatoes, marinated kale, raw roots, which are jicama beets, carrots, our sweet potato hummus, and our citrus tahini.
Now, the sweet potato hummus, it's really delicious. It's very unusual. What is sweet potato hummus?
That's
so typically, so I lived in the Middle East for a long time, and I love hummus and in all shapes and forms. But this one is special because it actually doesn't have any garlic in it, and so we bring in sweet potatoes in addition to the chickpeas, and then we add sesame oil and cumin, lemon, and it's just a very
it's a wonderful, wonderful flavor.
It is.
Really nice.
Thank you so much.
And so the other thing you have on one of these bowls I thought was really fascinating. I thought it was rice, but it's jicama.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So one of my goals for the restaurant is to make everyone love jicama as much as I do. I just think it's a very underappreciated root vegetable, and it's so crunchy and delicious. But yeah, we have the bowl that is by you, Linda, is our curry bowl, which has a delicious, our yellow sauce, which is curry sauce, and then tempeh, which is, I think, one of the most popular ingredients in the restaurant now. It has a ginger tamari marinade, and it's really, really phenomenal.
Before we go to break, it's St. Patty's Day, and there's a great big green drink here. So what is it?
So that's our green juice. So it has spinach, cucumber, apple, mint.
Oh, you shouldn't have told Joe what it was first before he tasted it.
Does it have?
I ruined it.
Does it have bacon in it? He'll like
no,
it.
Okay, no, animal products.
But it is.
Are we toasting or?
Did you try it yet, Joe?
It's really lemony. It's up your alley, Joe.
You left the sugar out.
It's delicious.
Oh, but it's
lemonade. It's not
definitely
a smoothie.
Sipping, though.
It's not a smoothie. It's a juice, and we call it our green lemonade. Most people think it's pretty sweet, actually.
I think it's sweet.
It kind of grows on you.
Yeah.
If Joe is taking a second sip, major big time. And on that
I'd
note.
I'd like the recipe.
I'll give you the recipe.
I'd love that. What a great thing to have in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah, it's great. It's really energizing.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking about the Windward Yard with Della Hyman. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with Della Hyman. She's the founder and CEO of The Windward Yard, and she's been telling us all about this new food and culture spot. She's also been feeding us with all this delicious food. But talking about feeding us, it's dinner in minutes time, and it's St. Patty's Day, in case you didn't know. And so here's one, a real simple one. It's shepherd's pie. Now, the British claim it for themselves that shepherd pie came from England. But others say it's Irish. So I thought, well, in either case, it's a quick dish and it's simple and easy. You can make it for St. Patrick's Day. And I make this with lamb cubes. Some people make it with ground lamb, or you could use other meats in it. But I get lamb cubes that are cut from the leg of the lamb. And it's, you know, just saute it. And then it has mashed potatoes on top. And then it has cheese on top. This is up your alley, Joe.
Sure. Ultimate comfort food.
Okay. Yeah. And what I like about this one is you can make it and freeze it. So make extra, and you'll have some for another day. And you can get this whole recipe and a photo at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer.
Shepherd's pie in 15 minutes.
You can do 20, Joe.
Well, maybe 25.
Well, the secret here is that I saute this really nice piece of lamb in cubes, take them out of the pan, and then finish the recipe and then put them back in so the lamb stays nice and tender and juicy.
Right.
And then you have your mashed potatoes and cheese on top. Not bad. Okay, so as I mentioned earlier, Fred Tasker isn't with us today because he's about to become a grandfather, so we're all waiting to hear about that. But of course, he sent me in his information for St. Patrick's Day. And he said, there's a question. You put an Irishman and a Scotsman in the same room, and what do you have? You have an argument. And he said, probably it's about hard drink, and probably it's over a hard drink. And the argument goes back centuries. It's about which country invented whiskey. And it appears it was brought to Ireland in the 1700s by monks who were returning from the Mediterranean. I didn't realize this. In Egypt, they had distillation for perfume set in the 1700s. So history fails to record the name of the genius who discovered that you could make this into a drink. I don't think he means the perfume part.
Right.
And the earliest record of distilling in Scotland came in the 1490s. So again, he thinks the Irish win out here. Anyway, the Scots like to say that even if the Irish did invent it, it was the Scots who perfected it. And so two countries can't even agree on how to spell it, because you might see it's spelled W-H-S-I-S-K-Y. That's how the Scots spell it, but the Irish spell it W-H-I-S-K-E-Y. So you can see it both ways. Anyway, in any case, it's whiskey. The argument is going on even now because there's a rivalry with battlefields, global climate change. He's talking about battlefields because of global climate change. The two countries were warm enough now that they're making wine. And so the British Isles are making wine there, and Ireland's making wine there. So there might be another rivalry coming up. Either way, we'll see what happens.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, thank you to Fred Tasker for that. Let's go back to Della and the Wynyard Yard. And Della, we have some more food here. And so there's all different kinds of bowls. Now, everywhere I go, I see that bowls are an inn. What does that mean? What's going on with that?
Well, I can't speak for other restaurants per se, but I think that there's definitely this trend of people wanting to combine a lot of different elements into one, you know, into one bowl and eat them all together. And then I think that the real trend that's happening is customization. So people want to be able to dictate exactly what they want, and they don't want to have to stick to a set menu. So that's one of the things that we're seeing the most in the restaurant, is that we have these house favorites, which is what you're eating right now, and they're very popular, but the most popular thing is that people want to choose all the different components and put them together.
And very interesting.
Bowls, can take all different shapes and formats. And typically, you know, what we're seeing right now, I think, all over the country is that people are they're bringing in a lot of different globally inspired elements, and they're putting them together into one bowl.
Okay. So now you mentioned to me that you're going to have a relaunch party. So you just launched, I think, in November 2015?
Yeah.
So why do you need a relaunch? What does that mean?
So basically, we're presenting a whole new face for the Wynyard Yard. So we brought in our first cohort of entrepreneurs, and then many of them, or several of them, spent the duration of their residency at the yard, and now they've gone out into the world to continue to operate in different areas in Miami. So now we're launching two new food concepts, which I already mentioned. There are going to be a few other.
Those are the secret ones.
You're right.
Okay. All right.
And then we're going to be launching a couple of other smaller scale pop-ups. And then the whole bar concept also just flipped. A very cool local organization called Tactivate, which is run by Jesse and Sephra Levin, took over the bar. They're launching a new concept called Mortar and Pistol.
So let's explain, everyone, that this is a big open field. And in the field, you have the trucks. Mm-hmm. But in the center of the field, taking up prime space, is this enormous bar. So I just wanted everyone to understand where the emphasis is here. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that bar.
What's happening right now is that Tactivate is a group that creates workplace spaces. And so they work with special ops veterans and entrepreneurs, and they're taking all these very cool, holistic.
Sorry, special ops veterans?
Yeah.
Explain that, please.
So special ops veterans that are no longer in the military and are transitioning into the private sector.
Veterans, actual veterans.
Yeah. So basically they put this really cool tent up, and they're teaching emergency medical kit classes, and they are teaching people about permaculture, and they're training veterans to work in the bar and to work in different areas on the site. So it's all about how to, Jesse, who's one of the founders, he helped to scale Brooklyn Boulders, which are collaborative workspaces built in climbing gyms. And so he's bringing a lot of those elements to the Wynwood Yard. So we have pull-up bars now. You can basically do a workout with a special ops veteran. And then
this
you
is
can,
in addition to a bar where you drink.
Well, yeah, but even at the bar, you know,
trying to figure
the bar.
This out.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. So the bar is.
Balance bars.
Which kind of bar are we talking about?
So we're talking about a bar where we're fusing different elements of work, play, life, exercise, and, you know, recreation, having fun into one unit. So we have a beautiful organic garden on the site, and you can go to the garden. The bartenders are there picking herbs, and they're infusing water and alcoholic drinks with herbs from the garden. And you'll see people, you know, you'll go up one day and you can get a drink if you can figure out how to get out of handcuffs or how to pick a lock.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it's a really special place. That's a really dynamic.
You can see why I had to go there to get a handle on what's going on there.
Did you?
Yeah, I did get my handcuffs.
No, no, did you? Oh, you did?
No, I went, yes.
Okay.
If that's what you meant.
No, I meant, did you get a handle on it?
I'm not sure.
We're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, all right. So just quickly before we're almost out of time, but you also, I thought it was very interesting, you also have cooking classes for children. Mimi Chasing, I think is how you say her name, gave cooking classes for children. So that's, what is that, every other Saturday?
So yes, so every other Saturday, Mimi's doing classes for children, and then we also have cooking classes for adults every other Thursday, which are being launched by Sarah Myers, who's also known as the Sprouted Chef. And so the whole idea here is that on one hand, we really want to help people connect to food entrepreneurship, who are the people that are launching culinary ventures in Miami, but also on the other side, where does your food come from and how do you prepare it and how do you connect more with the cycle?
Teach children that the food doesn't grow out of little green boxes from the supermarket.
Exactly. And so Mimi's really doing a great job teaching kids about where their food comes from, how to prepare it, also
engaging parents. And this is hands-on. All the children all come together and they're working.
Yeah, all the cooking classes that we do are very hands-on for children or for adults. You'll be rolling up your sleeves and you'll be prepping everything yourself or your kids will. Yeah.
Linda, you forgot the most important thing usually for you.
The dessert.
Oh, I love these. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's because you have them in front of you.
Oh, you didn't get any?
Oh, I do. I have some macaroons
Yes.
here. Yeah. And just quickly, what is the dessert?
So the desserts that we have today are our house macaroons, which we have vanilla and chocolate. And then we have our Della Bites, which are basically a raw granola bar. So they have cashews, coconut, dates, oats, lime, spices. Yeah. They're really
I want
good.
You
Kids
to understand that Jo has now said something that is healthy is tasty.
Oh my gosh, this is such a moment.
So you really brought him a long way. Well, this has been really a lot of fun. It's been a very tasty week. Thank you, Della Hyman, so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Della.
The food is wonderful. Thank you for your food. Wynwood Yard is, give us a location quickly.
56 Northwest 29th Street, 33127. And you can come check us out at the relaunch party on March 26th. It's going to be amazing music curated by the Prism Music Group and obviously phenomenal food,
you
drinks.
You said Prism.
Prism.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Prism. He's thinking back about the handcuffs, but never mind.
No, Prism, the Prism Music Group. Yeah.
So, and
it's going to be a great day, though,
website?
1 to 5 p.m.
Website?
The website is www.thewynwoodyard.com.
Okay. Well, Fred Tasker is going to be back with us next week, we hope, he'll be a grandfather by then. Jo Cooper, Bonnie Berman. You ate well today.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda.
And next week, we're going to be talking with author Dana Gunders about waste-free kitchens. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And that wraps up today's edition. Bonnie, it sounds like Fred's going to be in labor a long time.
Well, he'll have champagne to see him through.
Sure. Lead producer Richard Ive, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Associate producer is Polly Landis. As always, we have free audio archives for download at our website, that's WLRN.org, and more links and such at the Topical Currents Facebook page, including photos. Tomorrow at 1, it's Science Friday. We always enjoy that. And Monday, it's one of our South Florida History Quiz programs, featuring, of course, Dr. Paul George.
Joseph Cooper.
And Bonnie.
Maybe.
Here's a sample. What Saturday Night Live original cast member lived in Fort Lauderdale and was a postal worker? Join us Monday. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now. Next from NPR News.